Low expectations can often be a, you know, comfort the day after, I guess, huh? All right. Well, good morning, everybody. It is Wednesday, October 6th, 2010, a little bit after 10 a.m. This is the North Dakota Public Service Commission meeting at our regularly scheduled biweekly meeting on the 12th floor of the North Dakota Capitol. It's Kevin Kramer along with Tony Clark and Brian Kalk all in attendance at today's meeting. With that, I just turn it over to my colleagues for any opening comments or words of welcome.
Good morning and welcome.
Good morning and welcome. And we had a tough bison loss last week, but we'll rebound this weekend.
Move the items on consent.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Kind of a short agenda today, so that's kind of nice. And I have item number one. I move the commission accept the Federal Office of Surface Mining's 2010 evaluation report for the coal regulatory program.
Second.
And why wouldn't we accept it, right? It's outstanding as always. Complete approval of the program. Just a few highlights that I wouldn't mind addressing. Under major accomplishments, issues, and innovations in the program, the report states that the North Dakota Public Service Commission continues to administer a very efficient and successful coal regulatory program as set forth in the federal law, and North Dakota's permanent regulatory program has been in place since 1980. North Dakota's regulatory program is handled by a relatively small number of staff, and I guess that's why they consider it so efficient. The staff members that review the permit and revision applications also carry out compliance inspections and evaluate bond release applications, which is, I think, a pretty significant little finding, because it, as they state, allows our staff to remain very familiar with the ongoing field operations and approved mining and reclamation plans. And it's, again, given the smallness of our staff, and I would say probably per ton, I'm sure we have the smallest staff probably in the country, and yet they do so much work. But in concluding, they say that overall North Dakota has an excellent coal regulatory program. The North Dakota Public Service Commission staff continues to implement the program in a highly professional, cooperative, and fair manner. The Reclamation Division uses technology to become more efficient and make information more readily available to the public. Again, I think a very significant acknowledgement of both the efficient and good work, as well as the utilization of technology that our staff has become quite well known for. So everything's in order, and congratulations to Jim and Dean and the staff.
All in favor?
Aye.
In KC2, much like KC1, I move the commission accept the Federal Office of Surface Mining's 2010 evaluation report for the Abandoned Mine Lands Program.
Second.
Again, a very glowing review, as always. Just a couple of highlights. The feds concluded that the projects they visited met with the respective goals, and that they met the goals of abating hazards and improving site conditions at all projects conducted in 2010. And all is quite a few, by the way, as we've noticed, with the increased revenue that's been available for the administering the program. We've taken on more priorities, and that's good. They state that the North Dakota Public Service Commission has an excellent data management system, primarily based on their GIS infrastructure. And I highlight that because, again, this has been a point of very specific and strategic emphasis, both at the legislature and administering that, and trying to work with rules and a framework that allows that the development of a solid GIS system that is both useful to not only the regulators but the mining companies and certainly the public as well. So I appreciate that acknowledgement. In wrapping it up, they say overall the North Dakota Public Service Commission has performed its duties admirably and has adhered to its AML reclamation plan. North Dakota Public Service Commission is recognized by the Office of Surface Mining for the performance and quality of its work. So very good. Again, congratulations, Jim and Bill and the entire AML staff on a job very well done and the acknowledgement that they well deserved.
All in favor?
Aye.
That ends the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Clark.
Thank you. TC1, I move the commission issue an order in case number GE-10-590, granting the request of Thompson's USA Limited, East Grand Forks, Minnesota, to operate a 318,000-bushel grain warehouse at Grand Forks, North Dakota, I further move the Commission grant the request of Thompson's USA Limited to operate the grain warehouse at Grand Forks, North Dakota, on an as-needed basis. This is a receiving station for dry edible beans and will be operated only as needed.
All in favor?
Aye. TC2, I move the Commission adopt the order adopting settlement in Otter Tail Power Companies and at Northern States Power Companies application for advanced determination of prudence for CapEx 2020 Group 1 projects, case numbers PU09676 and PU09678, respectively. This particular advanced determination of prudence that the applicants filed for is related to four specific transmission projects that are being proposed. Three of them are projects that both Otter Tail and XL will be participating in. One is XL's project, at least for purposes of this state's proceedings. The three joint ownership projects with a number of other utility companies, I should add, are a 250-mile-long, 345 kV transmission line between Fargo and the northwest quadrant of the Twin Cities, basically the Monticello area, a 200-mile-long, 345 kV transmission line between eastern South Dakota and the southeast quadrant of the Twin Cities, which is sometimes called the Brookings Project, and a 68-mile-long, 230 kV transmission line between Bemidji, Minnesota, and Grand Rapids, Minnesota, which is referred to as the Bemidji Project. In addition, XL is requesting an advanced determination of prudence for a 150-mile-long, 345 kV transmission line between La Crosse, Wisconsin, and the southeast portion of the Twin Cities, which is referred to as the La Crosse Project. Something that's important to understand about transmission projects is there are basically two kinds of transmission projects. Some are reliability projects, and then some are generation outlet-type projects. The reliability projects are those projects that are specifically related to keeping the lights on. Generation projects are related to increased need for generation, hooking up new coal plants, wind farms, gas-fired plants, things like that. This particular group of projects that we're dealing with are overwhelmingly reliability projects. Now, anytime you add transmission somewhere on the grid, it potentially has it carries with it the potential that you might have, increased possibilities transmitting wind power from a state like North Dakota. But this group of projects really isn't related specifically to that. It's with regard to keeping the lights on itself. An engineer several years ago who was testifying before the commission, not in this particular case, but referred to reliability projects as you know, sometimes you may be walking in a neighborhood or down an alley and you realize it's not really a safe place to be. Well, from an engineering standpoint, they analyze transmission lines and they sometimes find that there are places where you don't want to be from an engineering standpoint. And in the upper Midwest, eastern North Dakota, Minnesota, we're starting to walk into one of those kind of gray areas, one of those neighborhoods where it's a little bit scary. We found out a few years ago with a major ice storm about this, where we were literally within one more line of going down, where you could have had rolling blackouts or brownouts throughout really most of eastern North Dakota. So this is the type of situation that these projects are trying to prevent. It's to keep the lights on. It's a matter of reliability for the customers that we currently have. And the record in this particular case was overwhelming with regard to the need. The MISO, the independent system operator that runs the transmission grid for the Midwest, testified in this case. Their engineers have looked at it and concurred that from a reliability standpoint, these are lines that are needed to beef up the system. The way that the commission is going about approving this, if the motion passes, is to approve a settlement. And the settlement would grant the advanced determination of prudence for these four projects, but it does so in a way that attempts to provide some protections that the ADP statute itself does not provide in the written words of the statute. What it does is a couple of things, and we've provided copies of both the order and the settlement that are available out on the desk. Is it sets a number of thresholds. The first is that there needs to be an execution of an ownership agreement by the utilities. In other words, they have to actually enter an agreement, which is a fairly advanced stage of this type of proceeding where they've committed money to the project. And then they have to notify the commission of that, and the advanced termination of prudence wouldn't kick in until 30 days after the ownership agreement itself. So the commission has some ability to look at that that ownership agreement. In addition, there are a list of critical permits that the project owners would need to receive from every state in order to have the ADP kick in. In addition to that, there's a clause in here that basically says that if the ownership agreement hasn't been signed and 30 days hasn't gone by, or you haven't started turning dirt on the project itself, then the ADP law itself wouldn't kick in. Now, the project owners aren't giving up their right to, at some point, ask for that through the course of a rate case, but it wouldn't be through the advanced termination of prudence mechanism. This is to provide some protections that wouldn't otherwise be afforded to consumers in this particular case, and I appreciate our staff's work in getting these concessions as part of the settlement agreement. In addition, I should note the settlement does treat one particular project a little bit differently, and that's the Brookings line. That project itself, the independent system operator that runs the transmission grid, MISO, as I mentioned before, they have not determined what the cost allocation scheme for that project will be because it hasn't been determined to be specifically reliability or specifically a generator outlet. It's a little bit of a blended project that has aspects of both reliability and generation. And so on that particular project, the commission is deeming it prudent at this point, but before final prudence is granted, the applicants are going to have to come back and give the commission an opportunity to look at that project one more time after the cost allocation principles have been settled. And so it's I would term it as sort of a tentative approval, but the commission will have a second bite at that apple with that particular project.
All in favor?
Aye. Aye. That ends the items in my portfolio.
Very good. That means that ends the items on the agenda for the regular agenda. In terms of announcements, does anybody have any announcements that they want to bring forward? If not, we do. Our next meeting is October 20th, I believe, 2 weeks. So between now and then, there aren't a lot of things going on. Just after that, we do have the on October 21st, the Bear Paw Energy Garden Creek Plant gas processing siting application at Watford City. And then the day after that, the Oliver County, Oliver Wind 3 transmission siting case. And then we get into November with regard to some of the formal hearings and whatnot. Of course, this week is the Lignite Energy Council, and meeting starts today, and I expect we'll be in and out of that, all three of us, at various times, including, of course, attending tomorrow's luncheon where we will award this year's reclamation award from the North Dakota Public Service Commission. So, any other announcements I'm forgetting, guys? If not, are there any questions?
Could you just explain why there's a determination of prudence by you all on projects, two particular projects that don't have any physical North Dakota presence?
Sure, and we discussed this quite a bit at the hearing itself. The reason is because you have to think of the transmission grid as really a regional transmission grid. It's not something that is solely supported in North Dakota or in any one particular state. And the best way to think about it is the 2003 blackout, where you had some contingencies happening in Ohio. Basically, you had lines crashing in Ohio, which then sent a cascade effect, and you had blackouts everywhere from Michigan all the way to the eastern seaboard and through New York. And so the benefits of the projects can't be, when we're dealing with reliability projects, can't be specifically targeted to one state. So the reason that we're approving these as a package, which includes the Fargo line, which includes the La Crosse line, and includes the Bemidji line, is because something bad happening on any of those areas could dramatically impact all of eastern North Dakota.
And let's remember, too, of course, we're talking about the multi-jurisdictional utilities that we work with on a regular basis, and the costs of upgrading a system of any type that are deemed prudent anywhere, of course, are paid for by customers everywhere. So it is an integrated system that has integrated benefits and values as well as integrated costs. And so clearly transmission is one of those things, as I've often said, is not built in a vacuum, but rather built in collaboration and cooperation with several partners. In this case, it's not simply just multi-state, by the way. I mean, we have more than one utility that we regulate involved in this case, of course, that being Otter Tail and Xcel Energy. But there are also several other utilities that we don't regulate that are involved in transmission build-outs. So we all do our part to provide the certainty within a very complex environment.
Do you have any idea how much all of these is going to cost?
We do. It's in the record, but I don't have it at my fingertips. We can get it to you.
Okay. Can you please, I'm a little confused by the tentative approval for the Brookings project and the other three.
Sure.
How would I describe the other three?
Well, the other three projects are, the difference really comes down to, let me put it two ways. Number one, remember I talked about reliability projects and generation projects. With regard to those first three projects, the Midwest Independent System Operator has made a definitive conclusion that they are reliability projects, period. Once that determination is made, it's clear how the cost recovery for that happens. And basically what happens with reliability projects is the costs are spread across the entire region. So you've got folks all across the Midwest who are paying for those lines. And the reason is because if they crash in this area, it could have a dramatic impact across the entire Midwest. And so those specifically, we know what the cost recovery mechanism is going to look like. We can make a definitive determination on them. The fourth project, the Brookings line, is a little bit different. It's a bit of a, at least as it stands now, it's a bit of a hybrid project. It's one that has some reliability aspects to it, but it also has some generation outlet aspects to it. There's a lot of wind that's attempting to come online in that Buffalo Ridge area of Minnesota and eastern South Dakota, and it's potentially a line that projects in southeast North Dakota would hook into. So it has characteristics of both. There's a proposal that the Midwest ISO has submitted to FERC to deal with that type of particular project. They call it a multi-value project, an MVP line. And but that hasn't been passed through the FERC yet, so we don't know what the cost allocation is going to look like yet. And we wanted to hold back on making a final determination on that until we found out exactly how it's going to be treated by the FERC.
And could you explain how your determination of prudence here is different in terms of some of the terms that are built in from what you did with Big Stone?
Sure. With Big Stone, basically the terms that are built in here are things that aren't specifically defined in the law. The terms of a settlement, of course, can go beyond what's provided in the law. The Big Stone advanced determination of prudence was a approval based on the law as it's written in the books. This actually builds in some extra protections. What it does is it allows there to be a number of milestones that the applicants have to meet first, with the idea being that this project is really going to get built, and it's almost a near certainty. Now, if it doesn't get built ultimately, and I have every confidence that it will, but if it doesn't get built, then the method for cost recovery for the utilities would be through the more traditional method, which is they would come as part of a rate case and ask to recover those costs, and the commissions could give it a thumbs up or thumbs down. All of the record that's been built here in the ADP case could be used as part of a rate case, but it doesn't automatically become a rate recoverable item as it does when advanced determination of prudence is granted, just strictly according to the statute itself.
And therein lies the value of the settlement agreement versus hearing the whole case out. There are things that obviously in the settlement agreement that were negotiated between the advocates and the companies that clearly wouldn't probably be presented if we were to take it to a full trial or full hearing.
And these are things that the commission couldn't order on its own. Right. So if we went through a full hearing, We may, in fact, I think we probably would have. I mean, we did go through a fairly extensive hearing.
Two of them.
two of them. And the commission, I think, applying the law that we've got on the books, would have had to rule that these met the advanced determination of prudence statute. But at that point, we wouldn't be able to order the terms of the settlement. Only parties can agree to these types of terms.
Bill, if I could, one of the things that came out in the attorney review and our own review was the difference of may and shall in the ADP law. And myself personally, I mean, I don't think we would have had to rule this way because the law said that we may grant advanced termination of prudence without these protections in the settlement agreement. I don't think I would have gone that way because the law needs to be tweaked. And that difference, the way the law says may, that doesn't mean we have to do anything. It's different than most of the laws the PSC follows, if you will, in my opinion.
Just so that I'm clear, these are things that you would not have been able to tell the companies to do if they had not agreed to it.
The terms of the settlement with regard to, yes.
The triggers.
We could have not granted it, though.
The triggers. Yeah.
We always had the right to not grant advance determination.
I understand that. I just, so a kind of parallel handling of Big Stone would have been if you had built in certain benchmarks where they would have been able to recover if they'd actually started building the project and if they had agreed to that beforehand.
Correct. That's correct. That would have had to been some settlement between advocates and the companies as part of a settlement agreement, certainly not something that could be ordered.
The permits jump out as a big one. That this one says they have to have the permits in hand before they can advance, where that was my understanding of the Big Stone project. The permits became one of the biggest issues.
Actually,
they
all of
the
permits. They had all the permits, yeah.
They had them all. It just it was the timeline that drug them out that caused the problem.
And basically, the difference here is that you have some assurance that they're going to be, starting to build almost.
Just about. It's just about that.
Right.
That.
In fact, some of the ownership agreements with the Fargo line, for example, have already been entered.
I mean, frankly, wouldn't if this same framework had been applied to Big Stone, wouldn't they have been able to recover anyway?
They always have the opportunity to come back in a rate case and request recovery, and you know, it's never good to speculate, I suppose, but in all likelihood, sure, they could have done that. But the ownership agreements and that would have been the fragile part of Big Stone, too, in this context, would have been the loss of ownership agreements.
Right, because remember, it was some of those deadlines at which parties actually had to commit to a type of ownership agreement where you had a party back out and then a couple others.
Glenn, Big Stone was a generation type of project. This one is reliability and transmission. There's a big difference there that a lot of the debate around Big Stone was what type of generation. This is a transmission that most folks agree with based on the record. Yeah,
reliability is a much different standard, there's no question. It's also a very high and important standard for the commission that doesn't get a lot of attention in most of our proceedings, and yet it's part of nearly everything we do, including siting.
Is it fair to say, though, that the principal reason for this agreement is to make sure that there isn't a prudence determination for a project that doesn't get built?
I think that's fair.
Okay. As far as not being needed, I get a lot of emails from a particular advocacy group that say that this is a waste of money and time.
Hmm. At the CapEx project?
Yes.
Yeah, their lights haven't gone out lately.
I would say that there are a lot of very smart engineers who would disagree with them strenuously.
And weren't these projects announced at about the same time that Big Stone was?
CapEx has been in the works for quite a while. I mean, almost since the beginning of my term on the commission.
Yeah, it's been a long time.
Because I was just wondering about, I mean, you mentioned that most of these are reliability projects, and I was wondering, frankly, if that were true, why was there such a coincidental development of Big Stone?
Well, you know, it's interesting, and recollection isn't always perfect, but you know, you might recall that the Brookings line and transmission from Big Stone, it was actually the only topic that there was actually split on this commission over relating to Big Stone too, and so there's that one small piece of it, I suppose, that one could relate somewhat loosely, but I think that the rest is strictly coincidence.
Yeah, they're very different projects.
What's the impact on the ratepayer in North Dakota going to be of these utilities?
We don't know yet, and part of that is related to the outstanding issue of the Brookings instance, because we don't know what the FERC is going to determine is the proper cost allocation, and that'll be a...
But if I understood you correctly, at least the lines that are strictly reliability projects, they're going to be... those are going to be allocated equally
to
all the ratepayers.
It'll be...
based on jurisdictional allocation.
Okay.
Right, basically, yeah. So, I mean, it's a little tough to know exactly right now what it'll mean for an average customer, but... It's very helpful that these are reliability projects because it spreads those costs out over a much larger region.
The biggest impact is that, you know, we're going to make sure that the consumer has reliable, affordable electricity. That's the reliability is huge. We're just you saw the news today where that Rural Electric in the southwestern part of the state, they're still trying to recoup costs on some transmission. Transmission's a big deal. The fact that we get this stuff built now, make sure we have the power throughout the winters and the summers.
Is there any way that you can explain in a reasonably simple fashion how these projects make the system more reliable? I mean, you know, to me, okay, power line here, power line here, power line here.
Basically, what it is, it gets down to what the engineers call N1 contingencies, which basically means you're one bad thing away from happening that would cause other really bad things to happen. And we were in that situation with the ice storm. And basically, an N1 contingency means you're within one contingency of having the system have a major power problem. In other words, one extra line goes down because of an ice storm. So planning engineers run all these different scenarios of things that could happen, lines that could drop, and what the outcome of that would be. And they're telling us that you need more lines built. One of the areas that you need to support much more, they're telling us, is the Red River Valley, which is why we have the Fargo to Monticello project. Another area is to support the northern end of the valley is the Grand Forks Bemidji project. It's ways really of just beefing up the network in certain spots to ensure that if you have some sort of catastrophic failure, that you don't have blackouts and brownouts and rolling power failures.
Things like capacity and redundancy ensure that should something occur, should there be an overload in one case or an outage in another case, that it doesn't have that cascading effect on the entire system. So, you know, I don't know if there's any simple way to put it, but every mile has an impact on another mile somewhere else, and we just need to make sure there's enough, but not too much, so that it's wasteful.
Think about the circuitry in your house, right? I mean, if you have too much load on one particular line, it can cause your breaker to go out. And so you lose power to certain sections of the house. Now, if you double circuit that, if you've got extra wiring in your house, it makes it a lot easier if you have additional load in a particular spot. It's kind of the same principle, but just on a lot larger system.
Is there another elevator in North Dakota that is 318,000 bushels and open on an as-needed basis?
Oh, I don't know. Is that on the large end, Sue? No? I think we've, yeah. It's not remarkable.
Okay. All right. What is the status of the investigation into the power surge, if I could call it that, Fargo?
The day before yesterday, staff filed their report with the commission. We've scheduled it for a discussion in our next commission meeting on the 20th. But basically the status is the staff came back and there's perhaps some areas where the company could have done things a little bit better, and we're going to sit down and determine our next step is about the best thing I'd say at this time.
Do you know what we're talking about when we say they could have done things a little bit better?
Well, there's a tree trimming plan that's in question that perhaps they didn't trim the trees back as far enough as they could have. Different circuitry could have been done maybe a little bit different.
Staff concluded that XL had at least some fault in the power surge that happened. Now, where the commission is going to have to use its judgment is that the tariff language talks about gross negligence. And so that's going to be a matter of interpreting the law and interpreting the facts on the ground and was it gross negligence or not. And then the second question is with regard to what remedies are available to the customers in that area and what the commission can order. It's clear that the commission has certain ability to fine utility companies. There's a little bit more of an outstanding question that we have about whether the commission can order the utility company to reimburse consumers' costs, which is a separate question.
In the meantime, the company has the staff report. They understand that the staff believes at least that there are a couple of areas that seem to show some negligence on the part of the company, and how gross it is or it isn't will be a determination for us to make perhaps later. But in the meantime, I have great confidence that the utility is going to do the right thing by the people that have been harmed in this way, and hopefully they'll demonstrate good corporate citizenship, and the letter of the law won't be the minimum standard, but rather they'll shoot for a higher standard.
That's one of the reasons that I believe we scheduled it for the 20th. That we want some time here for this to develop. Let's see how this thing shakes out in the ground in Fargo between the company and folks, and that'll all be interesting discussion we'll have.
What do you consider to be the right thing? You mentioned your company utility.
I know they've been meeting with, for example, the customers, that they've had some evidently good and productive meetings with the affected homeowners, which I think there are 19 or 20 homeowners that have varying degrees of concern, varying degrees of damage that have been done to some of their property and some of their appliances and things. And it would be my hope that those folks would be satisfied.
And if I understood what Tony said correctly, you don't really know at this point whether you have the authority to order XL to compensate people for damages.
Correct.
That's exactly correct. But the company always has the authority to do the right thing.
And that would be what you would consider to be the right thing?
To the satisfaction of the customers.
Okay. Buy me a new computer, a new refrigerator, et cetera.
Whatever the customers would be satisfied with. I don't know.
Do you have any sort of update, if that's the word, on the Berthold Enbridge situation?
It's my understanding that the City Commission has approved of the zoning change. I heard that from a couple of sources, but not from the city itself. I think Pat maybe has heard directly from officials. Is that right, Pat?
Right.
Yeah.
We received a letter from Enbridge
that
indicates that zoning has been
approved. So, is it on the...
Number 5th.
It's number 5.
When was that done, Pat, do you know?
I want to say the day before yesterday. I think they meet on Mondays.
I think they meet on Mondays.
Yeah.
All right. What is the reference number on the surge case, and is that report on the website?
I don't know, but we can email it to you.
All right.
Would that be easy enough?
That'd be good.
Somebody remember to do that.
Please, somebody remember to do that.
I think Scott's... reaching for a pen and notebook right now.
Are you on it, Scott? All right.
Are you reaching for a pen and notebook? I'm disappointed. I thought you'd, reach for
wouldn't
your
you think?
Thingamajig here.
High-tech young guy. All right, if there's nothing else, we'll recess for a few minutes while we sign some orders and get ready for come back for the admin portion, which I'm sure some other folks in the room are here for.
Woo, woo, woo.